Winters v. Frucon, Incorporated. Ramsey?
Good morning, Your Honors. If it please the court, Terry Winters went to work on July 7th, 1999 at Gilster Manufacturing. They were in the business, or had just started up a business of making cake mix, Duncan Hines cake mix. He worked on the graveyard shift, 11 to 7. The first thing he did when he got to work was he found out that one of the lines at a valve was clogged with cake mix material. This was a regular occurrence. He went and disconnected the computer mechanism by putting it in manual. He disconnected the valve and reached, as was necessary, into the far reaches of the pipes to remove the cake mix. He did not have the benefit at that point in time of any sort of warning label or any warning whatsoever given to him by either the manufacturer of this machinery, the defendant, appellee in this case, or anyone else.
Let me stop you right there.
Yes, ma'am.
Who actually manufactured this machine? Frucon, the defendant in this case, or the only remaining defendant,
yes,
installed it, and it was apparently disassembled at another plant and then reassembled and installed by this defendant. But who actually manufactured it?
It was a component piece of equipment. They put together components from various pieces of equipment, different companies. It had been dismantled in Jackson, Tennessee, where it was a one-floor operation and everything went continuously from start to finish, and it had to be adapted to put into a two- or three-story building where all of these different operations were on different levels. Frucon dismantled the equipment in Jackson, signed a contract with the owner of the company Aurora, or the owner of the cake mix label, and said, we will design and reconfigure and rebuild this thing for you in its different configuration in Centralia.
And is that enough to make Frucon the manufacturer for purposes of strict products liability and negligence in this context under Illinois law?
In my opinion, it is.
Okay, because, look, I'm asking for law here, not just your opinion.
Well, the law says, and it's included in our brief, first of all,
your brief cited nothing for this proposition. That's why I'm asking it here. You've done very little to attempt to fit this case within the context of a body of Illinois case law on strict products liability. And that's why I'm asking the question. What are the cases that bring this defendant within the definition of a manufacturer for purposes of strict products liability law?
I think it's a factual question.
You've got to have a case. You've got to have some.
Okay,
in Wisconsin, we have a body of law on this. I know what it is, but I didn't see any similar body of law cited in your brief in Illinois. Maybe it's there. Maybe it's not there. I don't know. But it's your obligation as the attorney to cite us to it.
I understand. I have cited provisions of the contract and Illinois law suggesting that, first of all, they are the designer. They design the configuration. It's very clear in the contract. It's written out in very detailed language that they are the design builder. Now, when a builder does not become a creator or constructor, they constructed the product. I haven't cited a case because it seems to me that when you design and construct something, that you are a manufacturer. You are manufacturing a finished product.
And are there or are there not cases in Illinois that support that proposition?
I believe there are.
And why didn't you cite them?
I don't know, Your Honor. I did not because it seemed to me to be evident based on the language of the contract that by virtue of being the designer and by virtue of their knowledge of the dangerous propensities of this particular place in the machinery. They are the ones that set the pressure level, which was apparently sufficient enough to cut somebody's hand off. They did not, based on the evidence, present any information to the shift supervisor. Mr. Hildebeitel had no idea. He, in fact, had gone through that same sort of cleaning operation himself. By sticking his hand in there, he testified that if he had been warned that that valve would shut with sufficient force to cut somebody's hand off, he would have never done that, or he would have placed a strip of metal in there to keep it from shutting in the event that some computer operator started the machine.
This defendant didn't manufacture the valve that caused
the
harm. And this defendant didn't manufacture the software for the computer essentially what happened here is that a coworker turned the mode back from manual to automatic, and that's what caused it to kick back in after your client had turned it from automatic to manual in order to clear the valve. That's what I understand the facts
to
be.
That's correct.
But this defendant wasn't responsible for the software, didn't manufacture the software.
Well, they were. They subcontracted with a company called Logical Systems Incorporated to do their work for them of setting up the computer software.
But that defendant was in the case, and you reached a settlement with that defendant.
Well, but if there was negligence on the part of that defendant, which was alleged and which was going to be testified about by Mr. Winter's expert witnesses, then their negligence in putting an improper and inappropriate and inadequate computer system in there would be attributable to Frucon anyway.
Pursuant to what law?
Pursuant to their contract. Their contract was, and Frucon...
This is a tort case, not a contract case.
It is a contract case.
Pursuant to what principle of tort law would this defendant be vicariously liable for the work of the computer software manufacturer?
If they contracted that way, they would be. And in their contract with Aurora, they assume that duty. They assume that duty of holding, of accepting the liability of any subcontractors they used. That's in the contract. It's also in the contract, and this gets to the point where...
They assumed the tort liability to third parties? What part of the contract says that?
It says that as the design builder, Frucon, as the design builder, shall be responsible. This is section 6.1, 6.1, and 6.2. Frucon shall take responsible precautions for safety of and shall provide reasonable protection to prevent damage, injury, or loss to employees on the work and other persons who may be affected thereby.
Employees on the work during the construction of this conveyor system, right?
That
Not
may be,
afterwards,
but it says
third parties that are injured down the road afterwards by the negligence or alleged negligence of a subcontractor?
Well, if you take this analysis in terms of all the inferences are to be decided in favor of the non-moving party, where this was a matter of summary judgment.
That's a factual proposition, counsel. I'm asking for some law, which there was precious little law in your briefs in this case. I'm asking for some law that supports this claim, or these two claims, strict products liability and negligence against this particular defendant.
Well, we've cited cases that, first of all, a case of negligence and or products liability can be made without the use of expert testimony. In my opinion, this is a factually intensive case in which the law that exists was wrongly applied by the trial judge, who incidentally said, I'm not going to let your experts testify because this is an alternative design case. Here we are back to design again. I cited the case on design and the obligation of designers of products to ultimate users in Illinois. But they say, we're going to have you design this. I'll reserve my time for the other part. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Good morning. My name's Dennis Rose, and I represent Frucon. As the court has pointed out in questioning here, Frucon was hired by Aurora, later Pinnacle, to install this cake mix line in the Centralia plant. It did not manufacture it. It did not go to Tennessee and disassemble it. That was done by others. It was shipped by others, but when it came to them, they had to install it in this facility.
Did that involve any reconditioning or reconfiguring or rebuilding to the extent that would bring this case within the restatement, which was not cited by the plaintiff, but you know would ordinarily provide a basis for strict product liability against your client in this context?
No, okay. to that part of it.
And has Illinois recognized that sort of liability?
The case that we cited in our brief that would come close is the Transcon case. It's on page 22 of our brief. And it talks about the act of installation is not considered manufacturing, as installing does not result in the item assuming a new form or possessing new qualities.
Okay, so it's an open question whether Illinois recognizes that doctrine in the first place, or this case stands for the proposition that installation isn't enough. There has to be more.
It has to be more. And it apparently is new form and possessing new qualities. And more than that, we don't really have a guideline. In this case, it had to be designed. This is more than just taking an air conditioner and installing it in the home and hooking it up. But again, Frucon was not a distributor. Frucon wasn't a manufacturer. Did they do enough to it to be held under a strict products liability and become in that chain? I do not believe so.
But we're not talking about the entire line. We're only talking about the valve. Did that change at all from...
No change at all there. There was absolutely no evidence that the way the particular valve was installed and how it worked was any different than it was in the plant.
My computer was controlled from the computer before and when it was reinstalled.
And the computer company supposedly updated the computer program in some way. But you basically have, this is on page 46-7 of plaintiff's appendix. You got a rectangular box. You got a hose coming into this side. You got two hoses going out the other side. Cake mix flows through there. When this line fills up downstream and it needs to stop, the computer says okay, and it shifts the slide over, then it goes into the other hose. That's what a smoot valve, a diverter valve, is. The computer senses what occurs there. That was the same installation as existed in Tennessee. So that part wasn't changed.
That operation, as you just described, was the same in Tennessee as it was in Illinois.
That there is absolutely no evidence that it was contrary to that. Because this cutoff at the end of the plaintiff's case, that the issue wasn't really addressed by the plaintiff, and the only testimony was, yes, this is the equipment that was brought up there. What occurred here, as the court described, is that the plaintiff went out, who had been taught about lockout, tagout, and in courses, had seen a video on it, but said, nobody told me to do that here. He goes out, puts his hand where normally you don't have your hand unless the system's off, and then his supervisor comes in and flips it from manual, which stops the system, to automatic. The reason that the trial court got rid of the products theory, and for that matter, negligent design theory, was that he looked at the expert's testimony and he used Daubert. I mean, the Cummins case of this court is very similar. We have electrical components that was suggested there and that lady lost three fingers. Well, in the Cummins case, they said you got to test what the implication of this alternate design would be. We have a continuous flow process. What happens if you just break the valve open and it stops the system? Does it? Do things keep running down here? Does something fill up? Does something blow up? What's the cost of doing it? How do you maintain it? And that's the Cummins case, which we cited in our brief, goes into that, and this court has addressed it. It matches, really, with this case completely.
Is there any Illinois case law that that adopts the requirement in a design defect case of alternative feasible designs that
yes,
have been tested?
Yes. The case that comes to mind was, I think, the Baltus case, which we cited. There was the first count was in negligence, the second in products, and they basically said, there's some kinds of cases where you don't need an expert, but this kind is one that you do.
Unreasonably dangerous product cases, right?
I beg your pardon?
Unreasonably dangerous product cases.
Exactly.
Require experts.
Exactly. So where once the experts, and they only, once Mr. Kelsey was excluded, because he himself admitted, the phrase was, well, my proposed alternatives must be evaluated for specific efficacy relative to the system. Well, did you do that? Well, no, I didn't. There was no attempt to explain his alternate design, why it was reasonable, how it would work in the system, and that was the screening function that Judge Proud applied. He said you've got to have that kind of information. Once that is gone and he's gone and you can't make a negligent design case because you also need an expert in this context, what you're left with is there a duty out of the contract that would create some duty on the part of the Frucon? Remember that Frucon has installed it. This part is turned over to the employer. Frucon was not required to train anyone. The training was done by the employer. Frucon was not to label it. The labeling was done by the employer. There's no evidence of any of that contrary, and there's no evidence that the equipment did anything but what it was supposed to do. There wasn't any bolt left out. It wasn't a malfunction. It wasn't anything of that nature. What it did was, when it went on automatic, it sensed that, gee, I need to shift over and put product in that line, and it did. No way of knowing that the man's hand was in it at the time.
Is there anything in the contract that could be construed as an assumption of liability for injuries to third-party users down the road on the part of your client? It seems to me the clause that was read by your opposing counsel referred to safety during construction.
Right. The court pointed out the definition of work in paragraph 6 of the contract, and this is what Judge Proud, why he really didn't grant summary judgment earlier in the case on the negligence count as to us. He looked at this paragraph 6 and he said, well, it's talking about what the employer or what Frucon's duties are while the people are working there. And let me find the language maybe. It was while the employees of Frucon are working in the area and people who may be affected thereby. And so when they're there, Frucon had to follow OSHA, had to do all the things for its own employees, and had to be considered other people working. But once they said, here, Gilster Mary Lee, you take it now, and they're gone, then that's the end of the story. There was no evidence of malfunction. It did what it was supposed to do. And what the court wanted to hear was some facts about the context. Was anybody from Frucon there still doing something? Was there some factual background that might activate that contractual clause to have an ongoing duty? But there's cases that we cite in our brief which say that a contractor, once it installs something, has no continuing duty on how it gets used by the subsequent user. And we cited several of those cases.
What happened to the other defendants in this case?
They settled. Some of the arrangements were made, and we were the last dog standing, so to speak. And that
would include the valve manufacturer and the computer software
designer? I think they were
designer?
actually dismissed. The computer company settled. There was also a third-party action against Gilster Mary Lee, which settled. As well as part of a global arrangement, so that we were, in fact, the last person. But the bottom line is this. They didn't begin to meet the threshold needed for products liability or negligent design. The experts were excluded, and then we're left with, does the contract create a duty? And the court itself cited the Binz case, B-I-N-Z, which by analogy, it was a railroad and FELA was involved and all that, but it and borrowed employees. But they looked to the contract to see whether there was any duties created. That's what we did here. And if you read paragraph 6, it basically says, Frucon, do the right thing while you're there working on the project, but it doesn't. Once the work is over on that area, the game is over, and you have no further liability. The judge gave them all the way to the end of plaintiff's case to try to make the case. They didn't do it, and this ruling should be sustained.
Thank you, Mr. Rose.
Thank you.
Mr. Ramsey, how much time? You have 5 minutes, Mr. Ramsey.
Thank you.
We did cite the Caterpillar tractor case that the designer of a product owes a duty to exercise reasonable care to foreseeable third parties. It would be beneficial for Frucon if their contract had the language that Mr. Rose just cited in it. It does not. It is very broad and general language. If the court draws all inferences in favor of the non-moving party, it seems that those provisions of the contract which obligate them to apply with industry standards, applicable government regulations, it applies. This has to be read in favor of Mr. Winters. That language is broad. It does not say what it is interpreted by the appellant now to say. There was a... If you can say that my expert's testimony at the deposition and at the pretrial hearing is such that he would have had to conduct testing to suggest that a sensor identical to one which was only a few inches away, which told the operator what the pressure level was at that valve, which indicated to them there is a clog there. All he was advocating is there is another sensor that could have been put in there that says and tells the computer operator, don't turn the machine on again because somebody is working on this machine. I have a computer at my house and in my office. When I want to shut it down, it tells me automatically. I punch the shutdown button. I get a second screen that shows, are you sure you want to shut down? That's all my other expert was going to say about the computer. There is nothing. And there's no testing or alternative design necessary for somebody to say, your computer screen can say, maybe you shouldn't turn this machine on again. Maybe you should check and see whether somebody's out there. But the users of this product were given no guidance, no whatsoever by the people that put this together. They were not warned. I think we've cited everything necessary. I would ask this court to remand this case for a new trial, allow our experts. And one other thing I would add, too. After we had expert inspections, we asked the judge if we could go back in with our experts and conduct a more thorough review, operate the actual computer equipment themselves. The judge said no. You can't show a compelling reason why I should make this money-making operation shut down its operation at all and interrupt their profits. I don't think that's fair. And then later on, when we did point out a compelling reason, we'd like to, since you've ruled this way, we'd like to have our experts test this. I don't believe it was fair at all. And then to turn around and say, you didn't do any testing, and so your alternative design theory is not going to hold water was unfair. So I appreciate the opportunity to argue the case, and I would request that this court remand the case for a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.